You're listening to the Politics in Action Report at CJMQ 88.9 FM. I'm Emily, bringing you an outlook on current political affairs. It has been another interesting week for politics in Canada. Here is what's on for this segment's discussion. Giant hogweed is proving to be an uncontrollable and dangerous pest in the municipality of Eastman. What's on in Quebec politics? As well, looking at a mainstream story, Doug Ford eliminates the sex ed curriculum, now back to the drawing board, and Prime Minister Justin Trudeau announces $90 million in funding for a highway in Nova Scotia. I will begin by taking our news to the municipality of Eastman. Residents of Eastman are enduring struggles with their own municipality and Mother Nature itself. Summer is known to be a time for the growth of the vast greenery we often admire. Summer also brings the emergence of pests, much like this dangerous one, the giant hogweed. The problem for Eastmaners is eliminating the plant and the spreading of the plant, a problem they have sought for their municipality to help eliminate, TVA reports. There is an immense difficulty, in part because of how to eliminate the plant. Touching the plant with one's own bare hands will cause burns, which is the danger of this plant. This is why Eastman has sought their municipality to get rid of it. The best solution is getting rid of it as soon as possible to prevent the spread of the plant. However, the citizens of Eastman remain dissatisfied as their own town continues to do nothing. The municipality of Eastman had informed TVA that they had sent final notices to the homeowners with the dangerous plants, stating they must get rid of the plant, otherwise the municipality will do it at the expense of the homeowner. To me, this doesn't really make much sense, given the homeowners don't have the solutions nor the proper equipment to get rid of the plant themselves. As well, I do think that it is a municipal responsibility to assist their citizens with any challenges they face, especially when these challenges can be harmful. However, this could be a matter of costs, because it can be difficult for municipalities to generate revenue. With that, this means there are some resources and services the municipalities may not be able to cover for its citizens. We can rationalize this as reason the municipality of Eastman wants its citizens to pay for the removal of the giant hogweed themselves. Since cost may be an issue, I would suggest that the provincial government take on the responsibility to inform the Quebec public of the dangers of this plant and possibly how to get rid of it on your own without harm. This would ultimately trickle down into municipalities and enable people some independence from their municipal government. I do believe the general belief that knowledge is power. The more we know, the less danger this plant will be for Quebec dwellers. Now for what's on in Quebec politics. With under 3 months until the Quebec provincial election, running candidates are doing all they can to acquire voter support. While the election campaign has well started in Quebec, it is almost as though it hasn't, perhaps with little coverage in the Canadian media outlets, maybe partly because it is covered mainly on French media, which is not something I confess I'm not typically exposed to. Nonetheless, I am here to provide you with an update on this election. Here is how the parties are performing in the latest poll. As of May 3rd, the polls indicate that the CAQ, with the lead at 35%, followed by the Liberals at 32%, and the Petits Québécois well behind at 20%. I have only mentioned these three parties for the reason that all eyes are on these three parties going into the October 1st election. We should always take these polls with a grain of salt, because these are public polls that don't capture the entirety of the Quebec population's party choice, nor is it accurate for the reason that people who do take these polls may decide to vote an alternative party come election day. So if anything, this can provide insight into the general direction of some Quebec voters. What these polls can indicate is that this will be a close election between the Liberals and the CAQ, and that we will more than likely have a minority government. It is clear that the PQ is not relevant in this election. As a matter of fact, the majority of media talk revolves around either the CAQ or the Liberals. It appears the new shining star is the Coalition Avenue de Québec, a party that has leaped far from its birth in 2011. The CAQ has offered some compelling policies, such as improving the waitlist time on daycares and ensuring that every Quebecer has a doctor. These are quite appealing promises that Quebecers find attractive. What is also interesting about the CAQ is that it is offering a new voice for Quebecers, unlike the traditional PQ and the Liberals Quebecers have formerly been governed by. As for the party in power, Premier Philippe Couillard has affirmed that he has followed through his campaign promises, which includes generating approximately 250,000 jobs over a period of 5 years. As well, Couillard is boasting the province's relative economic stability and claims that this can be maintained with maintaining the same premier. What I will say is that Couillard has been playing the campaign game well these past few months, arguably the most relevant time to make plays throughout the election campaign. All this to say, Couillard's Liberals are still well supported. I will say a little few words about the PQ, and that is, the PQ is practically irrelevant for this election. I would even go as far as saying it would be one of those parties where voting for them would be a wasted vote. I think they have well secured the status of the third party, which was really quite the shift from being in power under Pauline Marois back in 2014, so only 4 years ago. I think this is partly due to the fact that the CAQ is perceived as the better alternative, and PQ voters are now jumping on the CAQ train. I maintain the prediction I had previously, which was we will either have a Liberal minority government or a CAQ minority government. I do think from this point on, the PQ is getting a run for its money, and it will struggle to differentiate itself as a party apart from the CAQ. The Liberals, I affirm, are distinct and will always have a fighting chance competing in Quebec elections. The bottom line is, this election will come down to two distinct directions, the Quebec Liberals or the CAQ. The questions we must ask are, will the Liberals keep their power? Or, will we see the first time in a Quebec election, a party other than the Liberals and the PQ that claims the victory? Recently, Doug Ford's recent administration has been making headlines for eliminating the 2015 sex ed curriculum and reverting back to the 1998 curriculum. So here is why Doug Ford had decided to eliminate Ontario's sex ed curriculum from 2015. This curriculum, in particular, was enacted by the previous Kathleen Wynne Liberal government in 2015, and this was done on grounds that the curriculum needed to be updated from the 1998 version. From the beginning, this new curriculum all Ontario schools were to follow sparked controversy, particularly from Christian groups and conservatives. This was because topics of sexting, consent, and other topics relative to sex would be introduced in primary schools. Of course, it would gradually introduce lessons at each level of maturity, meaning at the early grades, they would teach children about the body parts and what the proper vocabulary is for each body part. The latter grades would then talk about topics relative to sexual activity. The controversy arose from the matter of discussing topics like homosexuality, which is an orientation some Christian and religious groups greatly oppose, as well as various other topics. With that being said, I do affirm that the updated version of the sex ed curriculum didn't teach anything the kids wouldn't be exposed to in mainstream society. With the greater use of cell phones, sexting is more prevalent, as well as people of the LGBT community who represent members of our own society. Even the world's leading countries, such as Norway, have adopted an up-to-date sex ed curriculum that would discuss these topics. With reason, it is representative of our current Western society. Just to clarify, education is a provincial responsibility, which is why it is not the same curriculum for all provinces. For instance, this is why Quebec ensures half of elementary education is taught in French, to respect the province's official language. So it should come as no surprise if any election candidates take an issue with something in our education system, they will alter it once they are in power. And this is exactly what Doug Ford is doing. So what does the 1998 education curriculum look like? It lacks some terminology relative to sexual education, such as sexual orientation and gender identity. It also, as I previously mentioned, does not include discussions relative to our current society, such as sexting, as cell phones were after the 1998 period. Nor does it discuss cyberbullying or same-sex marriage. So there is missing information in returning to the 1998 curriculum. In fact, Ontario's 1998 sex ed curriculum is so outdated, it is now the oldest curriculum among the provinces in Canada. This goes without saying that Ontario does not want to fall behind the rest and should keep up with the times. But instead of scrapping the entirety of the curriculum, Ford should have made amendments to this already existing program because there were relevant components to the document that apply to today's standards, if not most of it. Because now the Ford government has to devote more time and resources into drafting a new version. A critic would point out that this is a waste of taxpayers' dollars. If you ask me, I do think having a curriculum that matches what our current society looks like isn't going to hurt children. It is going to inform them. If anything, removing this curriculum is robbing children of their education. In essence, we cannot censor reality. Highway 104 in Nova Scotia is a part of the Trans-Canada Highway and is frequently used by both travelers and truckers. It is located between the cities and towns of Amherst and Port Hastings, but it is the section of Sutherland's Rivers and Antigonish that has people talking. What has made this section of the highway so dangerous? Perhaps it could be the amount of traffic utilized on this stretch of highway on a daily basis. According to news sources, approximately 15,000 vehicles travel the highway between Sutherland's River and Antigonish daily, and this includes 2,500 trucks, of which this route is imperative for transport to Newfoundland and Labrador. With a great amount of transportation traveling on this highway, this heightens the risk for an accident, especially in considering there's only one lane designated for each direction. The amount of accidents on this stretch of highway amounted to its provincial review. The review found that highway accidents occurred through many weather conditions, sometimes in normal driving conditions, and found overall 27 issues relative to traffic operations and user safety. The report found that the risk of fatalities was higher on this highway. However, the majority of accidents, 75%, were single vehicle accidents, which the report affirms will not likely be improved by a divided highway. Nonetheless, this report essentially highlights the necessity to find a solution. It appears, though, on this stretch of highway, accidents mainly occurred due to loss of control and the limited amount of space there is on the highway, which makes for a greater likelihood of swerving in the opposite lane or off the highway itself. Transportation is a joint responsibility between the federal and the provincial governments. Typically, the provincial governments seek out projects and then the federal government chips in to help the provinces fulfill these projects. The federal government often invests money into transportation for any province, much like it invested millions into Quebec's Champlain Bridge. But like most things in life, nothing comes free. The twinning of this highway is estimated to cost approximately $2 billion. The federal government has announced a $90 million investment, which is to be paired with the province's $195 million towards this project. The twinning will add an additional lane for each direction, making it a four-lane highway. Nova Scotia has many rural communities, and this highway has represented that in its structure. But of course, as time goes on and more people inhabit our planet, changes need to be made. This investment is directly relative to the overall goal of improving transportation in Nova Scotia. Based on this situation, what was delaying the reconstruction of this highway was the lack of evidence that a divided highway was the solution, as well as the cost for this highway, which Nova Scotia, under a deficit, was less likely to shoulder the costs on its own. There are discussions of implementing tolls on the designated highway in order to finance this project, and tolls are often utilized for this purpose alone and would help to shoulder the burden of the costs. People had been calling on the province to reconstruct this highway for quite some time. Now, it looks as though Nova Scotians are getting their wish. This funding does put Trudeau on good terms with the province of Nova Scotia, which is an area he will likely maintain in the next federal election, I might add. In closing, this funding will help alleviate the cost for this project, which it was in need of reconstruction for quite some time. This investment not only enables for the highway's expansion, but for improved safety and road conditions, and promoting tourism in the province. Thank you for tuning in for another segment of Politics in Action. I hope to see you the next time. I'm Emily at CGMQ 88.9 FM.